today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, March 13th, 2024. I'm your reader, Scott Splavik, and here is our first story. It's entitled, Case Over UI Protest Tests Iowa's Back the Blue Law. Authorities say protester blocked traffic to protest campus speaker last fall. It's written by Trish Mahaffey of the Gazette. Dateline, Iowa City. In a criminal case testing the bounds of Iowa's law on public protest, University of Iowa police officers testified Tuesday that Tara Dutcher, a transgender musician and community activist, encouraged others to block traffic while rallying against a speaker last fall at the University of Iowa who opposed gender-affirming care for minors. Iowa is among 16 states to enact Back the Blue laws, increasing protest-related penalties for demonstrations over the killing of George Floyd in Minnesota in the year 2020, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. Iowa's law provided expanded protections for drivers who hit street protesters. Three officers testified Tuesday that they didn't interfere with the University of Iowa protesters until they started blocking traffic after 8 p.m. October 16th, when the Iowa Memorial Union event featuring Speaker Chloe Cole ended and those in attendance were trying to leave campus. Footage from the officers' body cameras was shown during the first day of the trial for Dutcher, also known as Tara McGovern, age 45 of Coralville, who uses they-them pronouns. Police said protesters were resisting their attempts to move them out of the intersection of Madison and Jefferson Streets in Iowa City, which are the main roadways to leave campus from the student union. Dutcher, in the videos, told University of Iowa police investigator Travis Tyrell that it was their right to protest and to stop touching people as he was directing the group to get out of the street so officers could open up one lane of traffic for drivers. The videos showed Tyrell and other police pushing protesters in the direction of the other lane when they wouldn't move themselves. Dutcher is on trial for disorderly conduct, obstructing streets, and interference with official acts, both misdemeanors. If convicted, they face up to a year in jail and up to $2,560 in fines. Dutcher was arrested with six others. Five of those charged pleaded to simple misdemeanors and received probation and deferred sentences. Tyrell, in his testimony, said he learned the protesters had taken over the intersection, marching in a circle and blocking traffic. So he decided to come up with another plan to at least open up one lane for drivers. He and five or six other officers formed a line and then moved toward protesters, asking them to move out of one of the lanes on Madison Street. Tyrell said there were about 100 to 142 protesters and some were cursing at the police. Tyrell called for backup when officers arrived with lights and sirens. It seemed to move the protesters out of the lane so traffic could get through. Protesters then marched to the University of Iowa president's home, but remained on the sidewalk and not in the street. Tyrell said his goals that night were to support free speech and address safety concerns. He said he didn't want drivers to become frustrated because of the blocked traffic and possibly harm pedestrians. On cross-exam, Tyrell said he wrote two police reports but didn't include Dutcher in the first report because he hadn't identified the protester then. Detective Ian Mallory then asked him to write another report over Dutcher's actions. Mallory testified he was observing the camera from the area of the event and said monitoring social media to ensure safety. He was asked by University of Iowa Student Services to monitor the event because the speaker was controversial. The group didn't have a permit through the city for the protest and didn't notify police in advance, he said. He said Dutcher wasn't immediately arrested that night because he had been working 10-hour shifts over 4 days and then went on vacation. He issued a warrant when he returned. Gina Messhammer, Dutcher's lawyer, asked Mallory how he knew of Dutcher. Mallory said he knew Dutcher through social media. In the past, he had seen Dutcher's posts and knew of their local activism. The prosecution rested after Mallory testified and Messhammer asked for a directed verdict. She argued there was insufficient evidence to show intent. Sixth Judicial Associate District Judge Jason Burns said he would take the motion under advisement and asked Assistant County Attorney Jacob Benke to prepare to tell him what specific intent Dutcher had. Burns said he wasn't indicating that the case wouldn't go to the jury, but the court needs some guidance. Dutcher is expected to testify today in their own defense. Burns also warned the supporters of Dutcher and others in the courtroom to not interfere with the jury or trial process because someone had written something inappropriate in the women's restroom. In the women's restroom on the third floor of the courthouse, someone wrote, "Jury nullification" in one of the bathroom stalls. Jury nullification is when jurors believe a defendant is guilty but exercise the jury's power to acquit. Next is an article entitled, "Iowa's Film Tax Rebate May Get Sequel." Years after original program shut down amid scandal, legislators weigh a revival. This is written by Aaron Murphy of the Gazette Des Moines Bureau. State lawmakers and economic development officials believe a new tax rebate program for movie productions in Iowa would be a sequel in line with The Empire Strikes Back and Terminator 2, not Caddyshack 2 or Dumb and Dumber. Iowa's former tax credit program for movie projects, which ran from 2007 to 2009, was a box office flop, panned by critics, including the state auditor, who reported $26 million in funds were improperly issued by the state. Now, state officials and lawmakers are working on a sequel, which they expect to be far superior to the original. The new proposal would establish a two-year, $10 million pilot program under which movie projects that film in Iowa would be eligible for tax rebates on specified costs related to the production. There has not been a tax incentive program for movie productions in Iowa since Governor Chet Culver ended the previous, much maligned program 15 years ago. $26 million out of the $32 million awarded under that program was improperly issued, according to a 2010 report from former Iowa auditor David Vaught. That misuse resulted in at least seven criminal convictions of individuals involved with multiple movies in the program in the State Economic Development Office, including former Iowa Film Office manager Tom Wheeler, who received a deferred judgment and probation for his role in the scandal. The new proposal received its first legislative blessing Tuesday during a subcommittee hearing at the Capitol. Among the legislators who sat on the subcommittee was Representative Brent Segrist, a Republican from Council Bluffs, who was in the Iowa legislature in 2009 when the previous program came under fire. Segrist expressed his support for the new proposal, saying the legislation is designed to provide better oversight because of the difficult lessons learned from the previous program's failures. "The time before, the bill was, as I recall, pretty well written, but there just was a lack of oversight. And given the history, I just don't think that's going to repeat itself," Segrist said after Tuesday's hearing. "There's more safeguards in the bill, plus the reality of history will make sure we're much tighter with what's going on. But I think it really is exciting stuff." The bill was written by Iowa Economic Development Authority, which would operate the program, and Renovo Media Group, a media company based in Clear Lake. A lobbyist for Renovo Media, Jennifer Kingland, told lawmakers during Tuesday's hearing that Iowa has been passed over as a filming location because of tax incentives in other states and countries, including for a film about a writer from the University of Iowa Writers' Workshop. That movie is Wildcat, which is being produced by Ethan Hawke about the life of Flannery O'Connor, who was accepted to the Writers' Workshop in 1945. That production started filming in Louisville, Kentucky this year, according to Variety. Iowa is among 13 U.S. states that do not have a tax incentive program for film productions, according to Cast and Crew, a financial services company in the entertainment industry. "It is kind of how that business works," Kingland said. "We have seen projects that we have been passed over for as far as filming here in Iowa, going to other states, going to other countries." Asked about the proposed tax rebate program, State Auditor Rob Sand, who formerly worked in the Iowa Attorney General's office, said in a statement, Having prosecuted multiple cases from our first disastrous film incentive, I think we can find some more grounded, consistent, reliable ways to build our economy. Under the bill, film productions would be able to receive a tax rebate on 30% of qualified expenditures. The program would run for 2 years, in 2025 and 2026. Lawmakers at that point would need to determine whether to extend the program or allow it to expire. With its 4-1 approval in Tuesday's subcommittee hearing, the proposal House Study Bill 731 takes its first legislative step and now is eligible for consideration by the full Iowa House Committee on Tax Policy. Our next story is entitled, Advocates Say Cedar Rapids Should Fight to Keep Police Board. Bill to Ban Review Panels Advancing in Legislature. This is written by Marissa Payne and Tom Barton of the Gazette. Members of local nonprofit Advocates for Social Justice are asking the city of Cedar Rapids to lobby against a bill which advanced Tuesday in the Iowa legislature that would dismantle citizen boards that review local law enforcement functions like the one Cedar Rapids created in 2021. The bill requires Iowa's five cities with civilian review boards to disband those boards and prevents new ones from forming. The cities with citizen review boards are Dubuque, Iowa City, Cedar Rapids, Coralville, and University Heights. In addition, the bill would change civil service rules to make it harder for police chiefs to fire, suspend, or demote officers they have determined to be unsuitable or unfit for their positions. The House Local Government Committee advanced Senate File 2325 on a party-line vote of 13-6 with Democrats opposed and Republicans in favor. It passed the Senate last week 37-9 with Democratic support. The bill's advancement means it would survive a looming legislative deadline to remain eligible for consideration this session. The bill is now eligible for debate and vote by the full House. The bill restricts the removal or suspension of civil service employees due to violations of law or city policies. It also would allow employees appealing disciplinary decisions before a civil service commission to request documents and depose witnesses. Representative John Dunwell, a Republican from Newton, chair of the subcommittee, and other Republicans argue the state needs to ban citizen review boards to protect police officers from political interventions. Dunwell did not cite any examples in Iowa of police review boards being politicized. The civil service commissions are filled with citizens, Dunwell said, responsible for overseeing the testing, hiring, promotion, and discipline for police officers, firefighters, and other civil service positions. And so this just creates a process that makes sure there's a fair and equitable review of the actions of law enforcement, he said of the bill. I mean, these are people's jobs, their careers. Cedar Rapids advocates reached out to city officials last week to take issue with Cedar Rapids lobbyists being registered as undecided on the legislation. After the murder of George Floyd by Minneapolis police officers sparked nationwide calls for police reform in 2020, the advocates pressed the city to create a review board and worked with city staff on the ordinance establishing the panel. The Cedar Rapids board doesn't discipline or investigate officers. The police department's professional standards unit investigates incidents and delivers findings to the chief, who reviews that report and provides it to the review board. Angela Ramirez, a member of the advocates, asked the council to lobby against the bill. Your inaction has indicated to constituents that you have just voted in favor for the CRB as a performative way to appease protesters and keep them off your back, not to actually keep your community a safe and just place for all, Ramirez said Tuesday. City Manager Jeff Pomerantz wrote in an email Monday to the advocates, as a general practice, the city's stance on proposed legislation leans toward neutrality. We find that registering as undecided on developing legislation provides greater opportunities for the city to share and listen to our lawmakers, keeping the door open to positive conversations while legislation develops. Along with the City Council, I continue my ongoing commitment to providing an environment where our citizens can work actively alongside the police department. The city will continue to work with our lobbyists to ensure lawmakers understand our community's interest in supporting the Citizen Review Board. In a statement, Pomerantz said the bill's complexity poses challenges in forming a definitive position based solely on specific elements, as it both updates civil service employee and procedures and affects citizen review boards. Not registering in opposition to the proposed bill does not diminish our commitment to listening to and addressing our community's concerns, he said. Representative Sammy Sheets, a Democrat from Cedar Rapids who has not yet voted on the bill, in a statement asked the city to oppose the legislation. Our community deserves leaders who are clear in their convictions and who are willing to stand up for the mechanisms that enhance our collective safety and trust, he said. Representative Jeff Cooling, a Democrat from Cedar Rapids, said undecided is not a clear stance and doesn't give lawmakers an indication on the city's position. He voted against moving the bill out of committee. After Tuesday's council meeting, O'Donnell and council members David Mayer, Ashley Van Orney, and Tyler Olson spoke with the advocates in the council chambers. Ramirez said the council members informed the advocates that they personally are in support of keeping the board. Councilmember Dale Todd said the council has shown support for the review board, but the advocates should be at the Capitol, not at the council meeting. There is political reality that the city operates in based on facts, and in today's Iowa legislature, we have about as much of a chance in stopping this legislation as I do in beating someone in a three-point shooting contest, Todd said. Mayor, who was not on the council when it adopted the panel, told the Gazette that the review board is critical to developing trust among city leadership, the advocates, and communities of color. The lack of trust between ASJ, marginalized communities of color in Cedar Rapids, versus the mayor and city council shows how much more work and focus we need to address the impact of longstanding institutional racism in many organizations in our community, Mayor said. Advocates mentioned other instances where the city has registered against bills in the legislature. Since the 2024 legislative session started in January, city lobbyists have registered against five bills, three of which pertain to a proposed ban on automated traffic enforcement cameras. One bill is paired with language to crack down on motorists who talk into their smartphones as they drive. Speaker Alaya Boylan read a statement on behalf of Harold Halawa, a current review board member. In that statement, he said it has been an eye-opening experience to serve as a link between the community and the police by reviewing investigations and data to better understand the police department. The city's lack of action and decision not to use our resources to stop this bill does not make me feel that the city sees the CRB as a priority, especially when other cities did take a stance, Wallawa's statement said. In our final story from the front page of the Gazette today, University Heights installing traffic cameras. Devices in two locations, including on Melrose, will issue citations for speeding. It's written by Emily Anderson of the Gazette, and the dateline is University Heights. The city of University Heights, known for its strict enforcement of its speed limits on Melrose Avenue leading to the University of Iowa, is installing speed cameras on that heavily traveled street and another east-west route. The cameras would be placed at the 1200 block of Melrose Avenue, which has a 25-mile-per-hour speed limit, and in the 100 block of Kozer Avenue, which has a 20-mile-per-hour speed limit. The cameras and accompanying signage are being installed, though University Heights Police Chief Troy Kelsey doesn't yet know when the cameras will go live. When the cameras start operating, he said, there will be a 30-day grace period during which speeding motorists will receive a warning in the mail rather than a citation and fine. Fines will start at $105 for drivers going more than 11 miles per hour over the speed limit, an increase in 5-mile-per-hour increments. The fine increases to $120, for example, for drivers going 16 miles per hour over the limit, $140 at 21 miles per hour over the limit, and $165 at 26 miles per hour over the limit. Kelsey said since he was hired as police chief 5 years ago, he has consistently heard complaints from residents about speeding in the community, specifically on Melrose and Kozer. Melrose is the most direct east-west route through the city, which is surrounded by Iowa City. Kelsey said that some drivers use Kozer to avoid the traffic on Melrose and that speeding is common on both streets. Data gathered over a few days in April and May showed that about 15% of drivers on Kozer and about 11% of drivers on Melrose were driving more than 10 miles per hour over the posted speed limits on those streets. I expect those numbers to drop as people start to get warning notices, and if we can get it to 99% compliance or more, that would be fantastic, he said. And by compliance, I'm not talking about driving 26 in a 25. I'm just saying don't go 36. If we never issue a citation, that's a win. That means that we've slowed everybody. University Heights, population 1,200, has a reputation as a speed trap, with the Gazette reporting in 2016 that the city issued 907 speeding tickets in a year's time, compared to 617 in Iowa City, population 75,000. Kelsey said those numbers, however, were artificially inflated because the department regularly participated in a speed enforcement grant program through the Iowa Governor's Traffic Safety Bureau. In the program, the department could receive grant money by participating in speed enforcement projects outside the city. You had tickets being written by the University Heights Police Department to people who didn't know where University Heights was. They weren't ever driving through University Heights. It was all on the up and up. The state was paying them to do it. But the optics of it were, frankly, poor, in my opinion, said Kelsey, who wasn't police chief at the time. In 2023, the University Heights Police Department made 109 traffic stops, and traffic tickets were issued in 16 of those stops. One stop ended with an arrest, which also may have included a traffic ticket, Kelsey said. Because of the city's reputation as a speed trap, Kelsey said he was at first reluctant to consider automated traffic enforcement, or ATE. He talked with the city council about the speed cameras, and they decided to explore other options. The city had worked with the Metropolitan Planning Organization of Johnson County on studies in 2017, 2018, and 2022 that explored the possibility of other traffic control techniques on Koser, where residents have been particularly vocal about speeding, according to Kelsey. The planning organization looked at the possibility of adding speed bumps to the road in 2017, but recommended against it, saying that the low speed limit would require the humps to be placed too close together. In 2018 and 2022, the MPO examined placing an additional stop sign on Koser, but determined its intersections weren't busy enough to warrant another stop sign for traffic control, Kelsey said. As the city's efforts to reduce speeds through more traditional methods were proving unfruitful, we started looking more and more into the traffic cameras, gathering more and more information, Kelsey said. The University Heights Council on January 11, 2023, unanimously authorized the mayor to sign a contract with TrafficPax, a Florida-based company, to install and maintain the cameras. There would be no upfront cost to the city for the cameras, but TrafficPax will take 35% of paid citation fines. On September 12, 2023, the council unanimously changed the city code to allow for the use of traffic cameras. Kelsey said he believes the cameras will be effective at reducing speeds in University Heights because both the roads the cameras will be placed on have only one lane going in each direction. Even if the threat of a fine only slows down one driver on the road, all the other cars behind the driver will be forced to slow down as well. If I could put up billboards, I would, he said. We're adding signage. We're also going to add another radar feedback sign. I want people, the community wants people, to know that those traffic cameras are there. Our goal is to reduce speeds and make the roads safer. University Heights will be the first city in Johnson County to install speed enforcement cameras. In Linn County, Cedar Rapids and Marion Police make use of the speed and red light cameras. Installation of the speed cameras in University Heights comes as the Iowa legislature is considering two bills to regulate or ban the cameras. Senate File 489, supported by law enforcement, would require cities and counties to obtain State Department of Transportation approval to install the cameras, whose revenue often goes toward funding police departments. Another bill, Senate Study Bill 3016, would ban the cameras and also enact stricter prohibitions on the use of cell phones while driving. Law enforcement and cities oppose the ban, though law enforcement has long sought the ban on cell phone use while driving. Now we come to an article entitled, Danisco Proposes $22.2 million expansion of plant in Cedar Rapids. Project intended for steam generation to support company's operations. It's written by Marissa Payne. Danisco, an ingredient supplier and subsidiary of International Flavors and Fragrances, is seeking financial incentives through Iowa's High Quality Jobs Program to support its $22.2 million Cedar Rapids plant expansion. The Cedar Rapids City Council signed off Tuesday on a resolution authorizing the city to sponsor the company's application for tax credits to the Iowa Economic Development Authority for a proposed expansion of the plant at 1041st Avenue Drive Southwest. The proposed $22.2 million investment calls for the construction of a 9,000-square-foot metal building for steam generation. It would create two new jobs, all above the state's high-quality wage rate. The project is expected to generate an estimated $124,000 in new taxes over 5 years, with $55,000 being exempted. The IEDA board will consider the request for incentives at its March 22nd meeting. IFF manufactures enzymes for biofuel production and food, animal nutrition, and home and personal care products at its Cedar Rapids site. The proposed project will enable on-site steam generation to supply our current operations and allow for future growth opportunities at the Cedar Rapids facility, IFF said in a statement. The project represents a major capital investment in Iowa and is expected to create additional high-quality jobs in the local community. Typically, according to council documents, the city would provide local match funds through a rebate or tax abatement to support the project, but based on the scope of the project, consisting primarily of machinery and equipment, the taxable value is not expected to increase sufficiently to trigger a tax abatement on the improvements. Cedar Rapids' urban revitalization statute requires an increase of 15% on existing improvements to trigger the city abatement. Now we turn to the opinion page, and we have a guest column written by Rick Stewart, who was the Libertarian gubernatorial candidate in the 2022 Iowa election and lives in Cedar Rapids. And it's entitled, Methanol Ban Continues War on Drugs. The war on drugs has been an abject failure. $1 trillion spent for half a century to keep recreational drugs out of the United States, but today a fentanyl crisis ravages Iowa families. In Iowa, marijuana use can result in jail time, children being taken away from their parents, and a revoked driver's license. These are the consequences of the drug war championed by both Republicans and Democrats. Despite this obvious failure, our nation continues to fund the war on drugs and even expanded its efforts. President Joe Biden's proposed ban on menthol cigarettes is just the latest example. The demand for menthol cigarettes won't disappear should a ban be signed into law. With the stroke of a pen, Biden will instead be creating a black market fueled by demand from millions of menthol smokers who are willing to spend billions of dollars a year to smoke their preferred products, as they have done for many years. Instead of Iowa collecting tax revenue, criminal organizations will fill the demand for these products and collect millions in black market income to fuel their criminal enterprises. Because cigarettes are highly taxed in states across the country, it is estimated up to 21% of cigarettes sold in the United States are already sold illegally. Without doubt, this figure will rise dramatically should a menthol ban come into effect. Iowans' personal autonomy will be reduced. We are a state that values our liberty and limited government interference. While cigarettes are harmful, and I won't encourage anyone to begin smoking, those who do enjoy them should have the right to continue buying their preferred products legally rather than being forced to buy them from criminals. Smoking rates have declined for decades due to educational campaigns highlighting the harms of smoking. Education and prevention have proven to be far more successful than prohibition in curbing the use of harmful drugs. The proposed menthol ban is a misguided policy that threatens to repeat the failures of the war on drugs. President Biden, I urge you to ignore the calls of prohibitionist special interests. Remember our nation's history of failed prohibitionist policies and abandon the proposed ban on menthol cigarettes. We should support those battling addiction, not criminalize them. It's time for a new approach to curb harmful behaviors, one that prioritizes education, public health, and individual freedoms. And again, that was written by Rick Stewart, who was the Libertarian gubernatorial candidate gubernatorial candidate in the 2022 Iowa election, and lives in Cedar Rapids. You are listening to the Cedar Rapids Gazette on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of the blind and print disabled. I'm your reader, Scott Splavik. If you have any comments on this or any other IRIS program, please give us a call at area code 515-243-6833. Now we turn to today's obituaries, and first we remember Robert Paul Sieber, who finished fixing things on this earth on Sunday, March the 10th, and joined Jesus in heaven, where everything is perfect. Robert Paul Sieber, the son of George Paul and Margaret Sieber, was born December 23, 1937, in Sigourney, Iowa. He attended Lancaster Country School through the eighth grade and had great memories of running up the crooked tree playing Annie over with the schoolhouse. Today, it is the only two-story country school left west of the Mississippi. He graduated from Sigourney High School in the class of 1956. On June 29, 1963, he married Margaret Mum of Webster. To this union, one son, Paul Robert of Hudson, was born. He was employed by a man of refrigeration for 42 years. Side jobs including constructing Bellum grain bins, as well as repairing the local dealer's appliances. He was a tinkerer, building a dead horse outside fountain and a cat feeder. There were other things of equal fascination but lower importance. His greatest accomplishment was to fix things. Funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, March 16th at Lancaster Christian Church, with Pastor John Stringfellow officiating. Burial will be at Pennington Cemetery in rural Sigourney. Visitation will be from 9:30 a.m. until 11 a.m. on Saturday at the church. Powell Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Sigourney is caring for Robert and his family. Tributes may be made at www.powellfuneralhomes.com. Next, we remember William Bill Kallus, K-A-L-L-A-U-S, age 76, of Iowa City, who passed away on March 11th at the Iowa City VA Medical Center. Visitation will be held from 9 to 10 a.m. on Friday, March 15th at St. Mary Catholic Church. Mass of Christian burial will follow at 10 a.m. Interment will be at St. Joseph's Cemetery. Now we remember Dan Smith, age 70, of Solon, who passed away on Sunday, March the 10th, in his home. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, March 15th, at St. Mary's Catholic Church. Funeral service will be at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, March 16th, at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Solon. Burial will be at the Oakland Cemetery in Solon. Daniel was born on August the 2nd, 1953, in Iowa City, the son of Vernon and Maxine Kinney Smith. He was the oldest of seven children and did his best to help raise them. But Dan would say, you can only do so much. He was very active in his youth, and that continued into his high school years. He was class president, band member, FFA member, played defensive end and tight end for the Solon Spartan football team. And later, Dan would tell his daughters that he bled orange and black. Shortly after high school, Dan started to work for F.J. Krob and began volunteerism at the Solon Fire Department. Dan served on the Solon Fire Department for over 40 years and retired as chief. Memorials may be directed to the family. Online condolences may be expressed to the family at www.broshchapel.com. Next, we remember Kenneth Kenny Hootman, age 49, of Burlington, formerly of Cedar Rapids, who died March 1st after a vigilant battle with cancer. He was born April 4th, 1974, in Burlington, the son of Mark and Susan Patton Hootman. He was a 1992 graduate of Burlington High School and a 1997 graduate of Upper Iowa University. Kenny worked as a counselor in a residential treatment center for MHI for the last 4 years, a lifelong member of Troop No. 3, Boy Scouts of America, earning his Eagle Scout and Medicine Man Merit Badge and the Tribe of the Silver Tomahawk. He was recently named at the 2023 Shoquanquan District Mississippi Valley Council Scouter of the Year. A visitation will be held from 2 to 4 p.m. Saturday, March 16th at Lunning Chapel, where the family will receive friends. A celebration of life will be held beginning at noon on Kenny's 50th birthday, Saturday, April the 6th, at the Burlington Eagles, number 150. In lieu of flowers, a memorial has been established for the Camp Eastman Developmental Association. According to his wishes, cremation has been entrusted to the care of Lunning Chapel. Online condolences may be sent by visiting www.lunningfuneralchapel.com. Now we remember Alan Ray Slager of Cedar Rapids, who passed away Saturday, March 9th, after a long battle with metastasized renal cancer. Alan was born in Cedar Rapids, Iowa on June 10, 1960, to parents Clarence Frederick Slager and Betty Jean Slager. Alan graduated from Cedar Rapids Washington High School and attended Kirkwood Community College. He worked in the maintenance department at Armstrong's department store until its closing in 1991, after which he went to work for Reliable Carpet Cleaning until his retirement in 2015. Private family services will be held at a later date, at which time, per Alan's request, the ashes will be spread along the Wapsipinicon River by his favorite camping spot. And we remember William Bill Verba, age 77, of Cedar Rapids, who passed away on March 11th. A funeral service will be held on Saturday, March 16th, at Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home, beginning at 1 p.m. A visitation will take place prior, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Burial will take place at Czech National Cemetery. Bill was a Cedar Rapids postal carrier for 38 years. Some of his favorite hobbies including fishing, baseball, carving wooden songbirds, and gardening. He and Mary Kay would have been married 50 years in May. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the family. Online condolences may be left at www.cedarmemorial.com under obituaries. Here are some other notices. From Bluegrass, Tanner Brundage, age 25, died Saturday, March the 9th. Arrangements are pending at Carson Celebration of Life Center in Maquoketa. From Cedar Rapids, William P. Conway, age 67, died Friday, March the 8th. Popich Kuba Funeral Service, Cedar Rapids, is handling arrangement. Also Cedar Rapids, Judy K. Rahman Dennison, age 76, died Monday, March 11th. Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Center Point, Iowa, is handling arrangement. Alice Rochelle Evans, age 62, died Saturday, March the 9th. Services are pending with Brosh Chapel and the Eva Center in Cedar Rapids. Dennis G. Taylor, age 77, died Thursday, February the 29th. Hugeback Johnson Funeral Home and Crematory is handling arrangements. From Fort Atkinson, Laverne Hageman, age 83, died Monday, March the 11th. Helms Funeral Home is handling arrangements. From Maquoketa, Lulu Bell Cook, age 87, died March the 10th. Arrangements are pending at Carson's Celebration of Life Center in Maquoketa. Another Maquoketa death, Shyla Manning, age 42, died Sunday, March the 10th, at home. Arrangements are pending at Carson's Celebration of Life Center in Maquoketa. And also from Maquoketa, Larry E. Tubbs, age 77, died Monday, March the 11th. Arrangements are pending at Carson's Celebration of Life Center in Maquoketa. And from Williamsburg, Richard Joseph Chonard, age 42, died Monday, March the 11th. Services are with Powell Funeral Home in Williamsburg. Now it's time to turn to the sports page, and here's a rundown of what's on television today. In the NBA, the Nuggets at the Heat at 6:30 p.m. on ESPN. Bulls at the Pacers, 6:30 p.m. on NBC Sports Chicago. Lakers at the Kings at 9 p.m. on ESPN. In the NHL, Kings at Blues, 6:30 p.m. on TNT, and the Capitals at the Oilers at 9 p.m. on TNT. In men's college basketball, the Atlantic 10 Tournament, 10:30 a.m., 1 p.m., 4 p.m., and 6:30 p.m. on the USA Network. ACC Tournament, 11 a.m., 1:30 p.m. on ESPN, 6 p.m., 8:30 p.m., on ESPN2. The Big 12 tournament, UCF versus BYU at 11:30 a.m. on ESPN2, Cincinnati versus Kansas, 8:30 p.m. on ESPN2, Big East Tournament at 3 p.m., 5:30 p.m., and 8 p.m. on FS1, Southland Championship, 4 p.m. on ESPN2, Big Ten Tournament, Rutgers versus Maryland, 5:30 p.m. on Peacock, Michigan versus Penn State at 8 p.m. on Peacock, Patriot League Championship at 6 p.m. on the CBS Sports Network, the Big Sky Championship at 10:30 p.m. on ESPN2. Women's college basketball, the Big Sky Championship at 4 p.m. on ESPNU, the ACC Championship at 6 p.m. on ESPNU, and the Mountain West Championship at 9:30 p.m. on the CBS Sports Network. Top story on the sports page today, sky may be the limit for top freshman Freeman. Iowa's multidimensional post is the Big Ten Freshman of the Year. This is written by Mike Hloss of the Gazette. Fran McCaffrey said he knew what he was getting in Owen Freeman, and oh, how he liked it. We recruited him as an impact player, Iowa men's basketball coach McCaffrey said Tuesday. When he committed to us, we were really excited. I felt very comfortable at that time that he was going to be immediately impactful. The 6'10" Freeman has been just that. Tuesday, he was named Big Ten Men's Basketball Freshman of the Year by a media panel and co-freshman of the year with Indiana forward Mackenzie Mbako by the league's coaches. About the latter, obviously Mackenzie's a great player and I've got respect for him, Freeman said, but I was a little surprised, yeah. Freeman may have figured getting the Big Ten's Freshman of the Week honor 9 times would have been a tiebreaker. He became Iowa's first Freshman of the Year since Jess Settles in the year 1994. Iowa had other Big Ten honorees Tuesday. The coaches chose senior guard Tony Perkins as a second-team All-League performer, and junior forward Peyton Sanford was third-team by coaches and media. Freeman and Ben Cricky were given honorable mentions. Well-respected, well-deserved, McCaffrey said. Freeman, a 6'10" center from Moline, Illinois, is averaging 10.6 points, 6.5 rebounds, and 1.8 blocked shots. He had 5 blocks in the Hawkeyes' 73-61 loss to Illinois on Sunday. Perkins averages 14.5 points, 4.5 rebounds, and 4.5 assists. Sanford, the league's 6th man of the year last season, averages 16.2 points and 6.5 rebounds and leads the Big Ten in three-pointers with 83. Freeman hasn't made a three-pointer this season. That is an element that, if added, could help give Iowa another All-American player. I think that's the next step for him, McCaffrey said. Facing up at 17 feet, picking and popping, shooting threes. We'll work with him on that. That will definitely help him with his pro career down the road. It isn't as if Freeman's game hasn't been multidimensional, especially for a freshman post player. He has made 63.6% of his field goal tries, has shown a variety of slick post moves, has been a good and willing passer to open shooters, and is second on the Hawkeyes to Perkins in steals. My confidence is really surrounded by my faith, Freeman said. The more I feel connected with God, the more confident I am. That's who I am, and that allows me to be who I am on the court. I'm not really surprised by anything. If anything, I feel like there's more that I could have shown, but I'll just continue to be in the gym working, and I'll be able to show that next year. Perkins, a fourth-year senior, said Tuesday he hasn't decided if he will play another season of college ball allowed to him with the NCAA's COVID-19 year waiver. Iowa has put in a bid to host National Invitational Tournament games should it not earn an NCAA tourney berth and would likely host a first-round game next Tuesday should it be in the NIT. Our next sports article is entitled, DeJean Can Play Anywhere. Versatility athleticism could help former Hawkeyes' future NFL team get your best 5 DBs on the field. It's written by John Steppe. As Cooper DeJean answered questions from reporters at the NFL Combine at the end of last month, he said he wouldn't be where I am without Iowa defensive coordinator Phil Parker. He taught me just about everything I know about the defensive side of the ball, DeJean said. He taught me the ins and outs. He moved me around quite a bit, which allowed me to grow a lot as a player. The last part, DeJean's versatility, has been under the spotlight as the star Iowa cornerback prepares for the NFL draft. I feel like I've proven that I can play outside and inside, DeJean said at the combine amid a flurry of questions about playing safety, nickel, or cornerback. Obviously, I haven't played safety in college, but I feel like I have the ability to play multiple different positions on the back end. Over the last two seasons as a starting cornerback at Iowa, DeJean took 1,188 snaps out wide and 163 snaps in the slot per Pro Football Focus. While DeJean has not played in collegiate games at safety, he has practiced there. A few teams have talked to DeJean about moving around the secondary. He said when asked about moving to safety, "Whether he plays inside or outside doesn't matter to me, to be honest. I'll play anywhere," DeJean said. "I just want to play ball." NFL Network draft analyst Daniel Jeremiah wouldn't pigeonhole him into corner or nickel or safety at this point in time, he said in a conference call with reporters last month. "I hate saying it this way, but you almost sort it out when you get him there and see who you have got," Jeremiah said. "He allows you, almost like an offensive lineman that is versatile, to get your best five DBs on the field because of his versatility and athleticism to be able to play in any spot." Jeremiah saw just one little thing that bothered me about a little bit about DeJean at cornerback. "I just think there's a little bit of a pause in his transition, but I'm probably nitpicking a little bit there," Jeremiah said. Either way, whoever selects DeJean is drafting a big-time athlete. "He has football instincts," Jeremiah said. "He has ball skills." ESPN's Mel Kiper Jr. ranked DeJean last week as the 17th best overall prospect and third best cornerback in the draft class. His colleague Jordan Reed slotted DeJean at number 25 to the Green Bay Packers in his latest mock draft. Pro Football Focus is even more bullish on the former Hawkeye from Odebolt, ranking him as the 8th best overall prospect and top cornerback in the class. PFF noted his football skills and explosive athleticism in his draft profile that makes him a cornerback with all-pro potential. Even the always humble DeJean admitted during the combine he had formal meetings, a significant indicator of interest because each team only gets 45 of them, with about 20 NFL teams. Wherever he goes, between the 32 possible NFL homes and the handful of different positions he can play on any one of those teams, DeJean wants to outwork everybody. "I feel like if I'm working hard, it'll bring my teammates along with me," DeJean said. "Going to an NFL team, I just want to earn the respect of my teammates, first and foremost, and learn from the guys who have done it before me as much as I can." If DeJean learns as much from his future teammates as the unanimous All-American did from Parker, his odds of NFL fortune seem quite favorable. Now we come to an article on men's college basketball entitled "Beware Perils of Championship Week. Drake's Victory Puts Indiana State in Danger." It's written by Patrick Stevens of the Washington Post. Indiana State has a long week ahead of it after losing the Missouri Valley Conference Championship game Sunday, but at least it seems the Sycamores will have plenty of people rooting for them to reach the NCAA tournament field of 68. The Sycamores appear to be this year's cause celebre, the little guy that could be hosed by the number-crunching selection committee. Indiana State, with a record of 28 wins and 6 losses, has a gaudy record and a star with a pithy nickname, the uber-skilled 6'10" Robbie Avila, a.k.a. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And it holds up well in the metrics on the NCAA team sheets, ranking in the top 45 on all of them. What it doesn't have is an automatic bid after losing 84-80 to Drake in the Arch Madness final. The Sycamores erased an 18-point lead in just 6 minutes in the second half, only to fade in the closing moments. Indiana State also doesn't have much in the way of high-end victories. It is 1-4 in Quadrant 1 games, the highest tier evaluated by the committee, with the victory coming December 2nd at Bradley. It is 4-1 in quadrant 2 games, and it picked up only one questionable loss in a season full of chances to earn them, stumbling against Illinois State at home last month. The Sycamores own two victories over the current Washington Post projected field, a home defeat of Drake, and a two-point triumph over Mid-American Conference regular season champion Toledo on a neutral court. In its matchups with high major opponents, Indiana State lost by 22 at Alabama the first week of the season and by 12 at Michigan State on December the 30th. While there is a recent history of true mid-majors with plenty of victories and conference tournament heartache getting a ticket to the play-in round, Belmont in 2019 and Drake in 2021 both come to mind, there's still a week of basketball to go, which means the Sycamores' fate is far from sealed. They need no surprise title runs in the power conferences, Dayton in the Atlantic 10 and Florida Atlantic in the American Athletic. Surefire at-large picks are not number one seeds in their conferences. Winning their respective leagues would create some elasticity in the field. And quick exits for as many teams as near the edge of the field would help too. But for now, they will wait. There is little else Indiana State can do until Sunday evening. In women's college basketball, Iowa lands five-star guard from California. This is written by Jeff Linder. In the women's basketball recruiting world, this is a very big deal for the Iowa Hawkeyes. Addie Deal, the 12th-ranked prospect in the 2025 class, according to ESPN, committed to the University of Iowa on Tuesday. A 6-foot guard who plays at Santa Ana, California, Mater Dell High School, Deal joins Journey Houston of Davenport North in the Hawkeyes' 2025 class. "I love Iowa," she told the Gazette in a phone interview last night. "I love the coaching staff and I love the culture. Their style of play suits me." A resident of Irvine, California, Deal picked Iowa over a group of finalists that consisted of Iowa State, Indiana, Ohio State, LSU, Arizona, and Oregon. Deal was among the recruits in attendance at Carver Hawkeye Arena on March the 3rd when the Hawkeyes beat Ohio State. "They had us there at 9 in the morning for college game day. It was amazing," she said. "It was loud the whole time. It was amazing to see in person." She committed that day but didn't go public with her decision until Tuesday, 9 days later. Deal suffered a season-ending ankle injury December the 21st. She will be ready for club season in the summer. As a sophomore, she averaged 15 points, 5.3 rebounds, and 2.7 steals per game. Deal will be the 4th native Californian to play for the Hawkeyes, joining Lindsey Joffrey from 2001 to 2008, Shannon Perry from 1994 to 1998, and Laura Shaver from 1975 to 1979. "I love Iowa's transition offense. I love their pace of play," Deal said. "They're so much fun to watch." As for Iowa winters, "I've lived in California since I was age 2, she said. "I don't know about snow." In other women's college basketball news, Clark finalist for more big awards. Iowa's Caitlin Clark was named a finalist for a pair of prestigious awards Tuesday, the 94th AAU James E. Sullivan Award and the Dawn Staley Point Guard of the Year Award. Clark won both awards last season as is in position to become a 4-time winner of the Staley Award. And ISU UNI wrestlers get at-large bids. Northern Iowa's Julian Farber and Jared Sima and Iowa State's Will Feldkamp earned at-large bids in the NCAA wrestling tournament. Farber earned a berth at 133 pounds, Sima at 174, and Feldkamp at 184. ISU now has 9 qualifiers, UNI 7. And a final news article, or sports article, excuse me, with local interest. Rose heads to UFL as he seeks long-term shot in NFL. Cyclone great has plenty of connections in St. Louis. It's written by Stephen Hunt. Mike Rose split 2023 between St. Louis of the XFL and Miami of the NFL. But after a foot injury slowed him late in the XFL season and carried over into his time with the Dolphins, the former Iowa State standout is elated to be healthy and back with St. Louis, which now plays in the UFL, a league created when the XFL and the USFL merged. No lingering problems with my foot. I'm feeling really good now, Rose, age 23, said recently. Sadly, I had a longer break than I wanted. We've had 3 practices now, just been flying around. Everything feels good. Rose was a Cyclone between 2018 and 2021. As a junior, he was named Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year and twice earned recognition as a first-team All-Big 12 performer. Understandably, his tenure at ISU is a time he remembers fondly. Obviously, some of the best years of my life. Everyone that came in, we had a goal and we changed the way of the program there in my 4 years, he said. We were the culture changers at Iowa State. Hopefully these guys now, these young guys, can keep that going and do whatever their goals are now. Big 12 championship, anything at this point. And like many who have played for him, he credits ISU head coach Matt Campbell at the helm for the Cyclones since 2016 for the immeasurable impact he had on him on and off the field. That brings us to the end of today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette. I'm your reader, Scott Splavik. Thanks for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind.